It's because as long as we keep sitting like this and talking, change will happen.
جی عورت کے ساتھ جہاں پر بھی زیادتی ہوتی ہے میں ان کے ساتھ ہوں. میں یہاں کی گورنمنٹ کو بھی اپیل کرتی ہوں کہ ان عورتوں کے مسئلے حل
کریں. I appeal to the US government to help solve the problems of immigrant Pakistani women who are being violated in this country.
جی میں سمجھتی ہوں جہاں پر یہ اسلحے کی بجائے غریبوں کو پیسے دیں, غریبوں کی امداد کریں, اور جہاں گاؤں ہیں وہاں پر کوئی تنظیمہ کام نہیں کرتی, ان کو یہی لوگ پیسے دیتے ہیں, لیکن ان کو کہیں گاؤں میں کام کریں.
I would like them to give money instead of weapons, to give money for poor people. And they give money to organizations. I want them to urge the organizations, the non-government organizations, I want them to urge your NGOs to work for poor people, to work in the villages.
Mukhtar Mai is a woman of few words. She speaks so softly at times that she can barely be heard. She doesn't smile easily and is quite shy. But there's a steely toughness to Mai, a victim who is trying to change the way women are treated in Pakistan, indeed the world. And her message rings loud. Women of the world who have been raped, who have been physically, mentally violated, no matter what, they must talk about it, and we must fight for justice. You've been listening to Mukhtar Mai, I Will Not Die, a radio essay. This has been a Building Bridges, Your Community and Labor Report special produced by Mimi Rosenberg. Thanks to the Asian American Network Against Abuse of Human Rights and the Amnesty International USA New York City Women's Human Rights Action Team, the Asian Society, and Saki for South Asian Women. Special thanks for technical assistance to Ken Nash, co-producer and co-host of Building Bridges, Your Community and Labor Report. Sprouts is distributed and coordinated by Pacifica Radio Network. Thanks to Michael Yoshida at Satellite Operations. If you or someone at your station has a radio production that you wish to rebroadcast on Sprouts to showcase it nationally, contact our air traffic controller, Ursula Rudenberg, at ursula@pacifica.org. That's ursula@pacifica.org. I'm Mimi Rosenberg, WBAI in New York. See you next week on Sprouts.
And coming up next on Free Radio Santa Cruz, which is what you're listening to at 101.1 FM and freakradio.org on the net, it's Bathrop Spears Broadsides, the April 6th, 2006 show. Stay tuned. We're going to be replaying some of the Downtown Commission hearing on the 10, now 15-minute trespass law coming up, we suspect, at City Council on April 11th. Stay tuned.
secondhand Saturday night special. Nah, downtown plays Russian roulette with a brand new SJPD revolver. One bullet for injustice, one bullet for intolerance, and one bullet for the self-hating sellout Latino capuleto that will never bust enough Mexicans, harass enough Chicanos, or beat the shit out of enough Cholos to feel equal to his Caucasian counterparts. You see, downtown when you're brown, Officer Lopez is hunting down Chicanos like the Terminator, hoping in vain that one day he may be able to wake up and scrub the brown out of downtown, or at the very least, out of his own skin. Downtown! Sound of injustice is drowned out by the boom, boom, boom of tricked out Impalas and cherried out mini trucks as the cat calls of oppression are heard up and down Santa Clara streets, and beautiful Latinos tread 5 or 6 deep in midnight blue Buick Rivieras with gold smokes and silver crucifixes hanging from the rearview mirror. Downtown when you're brown on a Friday night, all the signs say no cruising zone. What they really mean is no fucking Mexican zone. Downtown, downtown when you're brown on a Friday night is no place to be, because SJPD will pull you over for being downtown and brown and for no other reason. And you will find yourself at the corner of 27th and Santa Clara at a McDonald's parking lot, surrounded by 4 police cruisers, while 2 pigs in SWAT gear search your car illegally, and a 3rd one frisks you. And now I'm not talking about no pussy little frisk like you see in front of a club. I'm talking about a real motherfucking frisk like they do on Cops, where they tell you to spread your legs, put your hands on the hood of the car, and they pat you down so good you think you're getting a hand job. And you know, if they don't find nothing on you, if they don't find nothing on you, oh shit, look out downtown, cause somewhere someone's getting arrested for being brown.
Cholos at my door, the same 13 the day before, hanging out looking real chingon. If you squint your eyes, if you squint your eyes, if you squint your eyes, they all kind of look alike, bald headed, no shirt.
And welcome to Bathroom Spears Broadsides.
13 cholos.
As I attempt to get it together here, having a little problem in the studio because I'm not hearing my own show, but I'm going to work on it. Phone number here, in case you want to call in, is 427-3772, and I'm hoping that works, but we'll see what's happening. I understand we are going out on the air, so that's good. And, again, the number is 427-3772. If you want to jump on the chat room, pagesincolor.com. Pagesincolor.com is a place to go. If you want to leave a message off air, you can go to 423-4833. Or 423-HUFF, which is the HUFF line, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, organization I work with and one that I'm putting in some work recently on. You may have caught it before, the intro to the show, the 15-minute trespass law in parking lots and garages, about which you can find more information on indiebay.org, going to the Santa Cruz section. This is an anti-homeless law, and also actually just an anti-community kind of pro-police state law that has made its way out of the downtown commission by a 5-1 vote and is, I think, headed for city council. I was not able to check the agenda for Tuesday, April 11th, which is when this next city council meeting is, but I have been told by Ryan Coonerty, at least I was told a week or two ago, Councilmember Coonerty, a backer of this law, that it will be on the city council agenda on April 11th. So unless they've wised up or some important pressure has been brought to bear, that's going to be happening, and we're going to have to deal with it. It will probably be on the afternoon agenda. I'll be talking about it more on Sunday. And what I want to do today, once I find the appropriate tape, which is always something of a struggle, is I want to play the second special meeting of the Downtown Commission, which was held back on March 23rd. The Downtown Commission, as regular listeners probably know, is a group the City Council has appointed that advises them on downtown issues. And those are, you know, issues like parking lots and garages, homeless people cluttering up the downtown, how and where we can put in new change machines to move along those who want to be within 50 feet of them. Let's put it this way. Those who are sitting on a certain space of sidewalk or collecting will no longer be able to do so over a 100-foot radius, actually a 100-foot stretch, because of the new change machine that's been put in. And we saw that, of course, most recently at the Metro, where there are four change machines within a radius of about 200 or 300 feet. One of them is inside the building, and there's one across the street. There's another one outside the Metro, and I guess there's also an ATM machine at Tampico's. And I think there may even be a fourth machine. I'm always a little muddled on that issue. But obviously too many machines, and some of them specifically put in, Matt Farrell of the Parking Authority acknowledged, simply to drive away young people. It's sort of an anti-homeless architecture. And, of course, the homeless then move to a parking lot nearby, and the young folks across from Elm Street Mission, where there's a feeding, and more about that. Apparently people are being encouraged, merchants are being encouraged not to give away food at night, according to at least one report I've mentioned earlier on this show. You know, when the restaurants are closed and there's food left over, they don't want, you know, the flies and the homeless clustering to pick up the food. So that's going on. But the relevant to what I'm saying about the new 10-minute trespass law, actually a 15-minute trespass law, if the city council picks it up as it's been proposed by the Downtown Commission, which it more than likely will, since the Downtown Commission, in spite of taking two special meetings to examine it, and spending the whole part of the third meeting, their main meeting in January, examining it, did not really examine any alternatives or really get statistics on some key issues, like is there really a crime wave downtown that requires setting up a measure that will drive people away from public spaces that they have used, all kinds of people, not just homeless people, ordinary people, you know, guys and gals who want to sit in their cars or hang out in the parking lots or in the parking structures. It's a part of the Santa Cruz open public space downtown. And is there really a problem with that, with in terms of a crime wave? I mean, admittedly, there's a homeless problem, and people, and that's the biggest category in terms of the complaints from the parking lot attendants, is that, you know, they have to break up encampments of homeless people, or in the sense that people, they don't have, you know, encampments in the sense that they're encampments out on the Poganip, but they're people who come in out of the rain, who need a place to stay overnight out of the wind, who sleep in these places because the city refuses to deal with emergency shelter, refuses to address the issue other than to provide the armory, which it does so at an extremely costly rate, and which will be closing, I believe it's I think it's this month. I'd heard that it was going to stay open until June at some point, but I think I may have misunderstood that. It may be closing this month. That was kind of the latest I heard, but I'm not sure. If anybody has any notions, details, updates on this, give a call to 427-3772. Although I've got to admit I am having some real problems hearing myself in the studio, so I may not even be able to hear incoming calls, which will be too bad. But at least you're hearing me, so hey, I can just jabber away at you, and hopefully that'll have some positive result. Before I get to the downtown stuff, let me take a moment to take a brief musical break to sort of sort things out, and we'll proceed from there. Here's a little Danielle Savage, the street singer of My Dreams, who actually I don't think she's singing so much in the streets as maybe in clubs and so forth. And you've heard her before, and you'll probably hear her again. A little something from her.
Please don't lie to me. I got I don't know what you see, and I see through all your greed, and feel what I don't need. Whoa. So I was the brother of life in the fast lane. You're going uptown and feeling insane. You bear a spat, your boss I do. You're hurling on yourself and you got shit in your shoe. So live up and down to my high expectations. You don't, I'll give you some organ rotations. Prediction, addiction, tell me a little more. You don't move a thing and you're gonna be a little soul. So please, please, won't you come down on me. I got no compass and not much left to see. But as long as I'm here on this earth, I'm giving you what you deserve. Just because I'm laughing doesn't mean I'll take your shit. And just because I'm acting nuts doesn't mean I'll suck your dick. PhD's a novelty like a trophy. Too many means to really see me. First impressions have no taste. Such a waste to get caught up on who you think you are. The illusion of security is what makes us weak. See, what you need is what you see. And what we see is what we be. No reason to need this. It just is so transfixed. Cause in these times it's a crime to find mine with you behind the times or read between the lines. It's so blinding. Yeah, well, stay up crying for the love that's hiding. Yeah, yeah, yeah. You can feel me up or feel me down, and still you won't feel your way up around my head. But if I scream for tomorrow, you know the better I'm dead. At least that's what they say. At least that's what they say. So please don't lie to me. Cause I don't know what you see. And I see through all your greed. And feel what I don't need. Everybody's talking. Is anybody walking? Here I go. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Here I go. The amphetamine in personified times. Believing this crime's realizing it's not fine. Not mine. All swine. We're dining and dining and dining and finding I'm blinded by excess. What I need is much less. Yeah, we find it harmless to regress into a state of apathy and greed. Where we eat away others' needs. Not hearing the pleas as they suffer. So we can lead what we perceive as a better life. Cause you're like a knife, insides ripped out with so much strife. And we believe that it's the only way. So please don't lie to me. Cause I don't know what you see. And I'll see through all your greed. And feel what I don't need. Everybody's talking. Is anybody walking? Here I go. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And that was Danielle Savage. A little hard to decipher which track that was, but I think it's BBB. Although the only BBB I could think of is the Biotic Baking Brigade, the pie-throwing madcap activists up in San Francisco who pied Willie Brown in response to his criminal abuse of homeless people up there. which is a program that's continued to be followed by Mayor Gavin Newsom. So nothing has really changed. But people sometimes raise the issue, as I do here in Santa Cruz, and I think that's always good, because eventually, if the issue gets raised enough, it has to be addressed. That's my theory anyway. You're tuned to Free Radio 101.1 FM. A fine and knowledgeable Free Radio broadcaster here has assisted me in clarifying a few problems, and I will be able to hear you on the air, and I can actually hear myself, which is always very gratifying. So if you want to call in, the phone number is 427-3772, and I'd like to hear you. What I'm going to do now is turn again to the Downtown Commission of March 23rd. That's the last one. They had two sessions in the space of a week, two special sessions, in order to rush the agenda on the 15-minute trespass law. I call it 15 minutes because they modified it, you see, in their great liberality and compassion. They decided that it will be criminal to be there after 15 minutes instead of after 10. So if you want to stay dry, you can stay dry for 15 minutes if you have a car or bicycle, in which case you don't need to stay dry anyway. In fact, this law makes about 30 blocks of Santa Cruz downtown space criminal to be in at all unless you have a car or a bicycle and unless you are parking it and then only for 15 minutes. I've invited those who favor this law to come on the air to discuss it. We have a broadcaster, Ann Simonton, who favors it and actually quite vigorously favors it, but she doesn't want to talk about it on the air. At least she hasn't talked about it on my show. Maybe she's talked about it on hers. But she's invited to come in and talk about it on Sunday. She doesn't need to talk about it, of course. See, the city council is going to do the dirty work for the parking attendants on this issue. It's going to ram it through on Tuesday in the afternoon, and then 2 weeks later it'll do a second reading, and it'll be passed into law. What I think is the harshest parking lot law of any city, except perhaps Santa Barbara, which simply has a law which bans people. Actually, in a way, Santa Barbara's law is looser, because I think Santa Barbara's law doesn't have a 15-minute involvement at all. It says you can't, you can only use your parking lot for parking your car, so that means you can park your car and be in your car, presumably. Although I haven't yet checked with local public defender and homeless advocate attorney down there, Glenn Maurer, who can probably give me more details. I keep wanting to check, but I'm getting sidetracked. So I'll try to give you more information. And if you want to talk to the city council about this, give them a call, 420-5023. 420-5023 is actually the number for Mike Rotkin. 420-5020 is the number for the entire city council, 420-5020. That's a 24-hour number, unlike the Board of Supervisors, which will only let you talk to them, to their staff, between 8 and 5 every day. City Council does have a 24-hour number, so give them a call. Let them know what you think. Ask if they call you back and tell them to vote no on this. And you'll know why, because I'm going to start playing you some of the straight stuff coming out of their very own advisory board, and you'll be able to hear that discussion. There's no public comment on here because the public comment was all at the previous meeting. We asked that public comment be reopened, but because certain members of the public had not been allowed to speak because the meeting was held at a very difficult time for some people to come to, 8:30 in the morning, and at an unusual point, it was not held when the usual downtown commission meeting is heard, which I think is the, I don't know, third or fourth Thursday of every month. But that wasn't allowed by the chair, Julie Shattuck. And indeed, the whole process was further rushed forward by Matt Farrell and City Attorney John Barisone, who seemed to be directing things. Let's put it this way. He's exerting a lot of influence on the proceedings at the first Downtown Commission special hearing the week before on March 16th, when he kind of rushed up to the mic, interrupted them, and said, oh, you can hold a special meeting next week if you want. You don't have to have public notice other than 72 hours because this is a continuation of your current meeting, blah, blah, blah. He gave them, in essence, he was sort of moving the show forward in his impatient, I run the city kind of way. At least that's one interpretation. Let's hear now some of the Downtown Commission hearing. It's pretty long. I'm not going to play it all. I'm going to play some of it. I'm going to stop to comment. I will also stop to comment if others want to talk about it. There are other hearings that have also been held recently, which the public was invited to, but there wasn't room for everybody and there wasn't much time for people to speak. There was a special city council meeting 2 days ago in the public library on the issue of giving Danette Shoemaker, the Parks and Rec czar or czarina, more power to close down, set hours for any parks that she wants, any time she wants, without going back to city council. She's already, you know, got this no smoking stuff in the San Lorenzo Park and the Grant Street Park. Again, don't get me wrong. I am not a smoker. I can't stand smoking. But I recognize a lot of people are, or a number of people are, and this legislation, as Sherry Connable has rather eloquently pointed out in a lengthy email, which I hope someday she'll share publicly, really anti-homeless, part of this whole process of a series of different laws, regulations, and police measures, which is moving to gentrify the town and move people along and out. And it's the wrong direction, folks. I mean, we need an inclusive and diverse community, not one that is tailored to the San Jose gentry or, you know, Bohemian Club emigres or whatever. So here we go. Downtown Commission. Call-in number is 427-3772 if you want to talk about any of this. And don't wait. Call in and I will talk to you off air. And if we've got some stuff to talk about on air, we'll stop the tape and play it on air. Bye-bye. I mean, hi-hi. Stay tuned and let's go ahead.
I'd like to call the meeting to order. Roll call.
Commissioner Shattuck.
Present.
Commissioner Bisbee.
Present.
Commissioner Ferrara.
Present.
Commissioner Coonerty.
Present.
Commissioner Mandel.
Here.
Commissioner Hoffman.
Present.
Commissioner Brown is absent with notification.
Okay. I want to thank members of the public that came out to the meeting today. I want to let you know this is a continuation meeting of our meeting, our special meeting last Thursday. We'll be allowing commissioners to deliberate on the ordinance and make a recommendation. The meeting is closed to public comment. We will have at least one staff report. The only other item on the agenda is oral communications. I'd like to limit that to 3 minutes. If there's anyone that would like to speak on anything not related to the item on the agenda, you can please come forward. And we will be limiting time to 3 minutes. Laura, can you use the timer?
Commission members, excuse me, members of the public, I'm Robert Norris, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom. This, of course, is not on the agenda. What is a concern to me is the general structure of the meeting, that we are suddenly having two special meetings, one after another, in order to facilitate what looks like a very rushed process. And this is a general comment, so I'm not making a comment particularly about the 10-minute trespass law, which I understand discussion is closed on. But I think that when you are talking about these issues, you have to have a really adequate public process. And I'm pleased to see that some new data has appeared. In terms of general problems downtown, I've recently been in conference with Steve Hammack of the Parks and Rec Commission, or Department, I should say, who works with the commission. Because it's a related issue to your other issue that will be coming up today, which has to do with the removal of benches from the downtown. Originally, Mr. Hammack told me that one bench had been removed in the last 4 years and that he had no documentation for anything else. Of course, we all know that at least 6 benches have been removed, 2 from in front of the Veterans Hall, 2 from across from the Cafe Bene, 1 from across from the Metro, 1 from in front of the Pacific Cookie Company, 1 from in front of Borders, and most recently, 1 from in front of Lee's Sandwiches, where, in fact, there has been, you know, a new sidewalk seating area put in. I have support for merchants wanting to establish business in a congenial way on the sidewalk. I'm concerned that this takes away public space. What I'm really concerned about is when there is, in fact, what amounts to a cover-up and a lack of responsibility and accountability on this issue. And I think this impacts the downtown commission here because what we're talking about later, what you're talking about later today, what we brought to you earlier is public space. And so these are concerns I think you need more information on. Why are there 4 change-making machines within a radius of 100 feet at the Metro, specifically designed to drive away groups of poor people, young people who hang out? The pretext that this is somehow the sidewalks don't belong to one group sounds really hollow when, in fact, merchants set up their own stands on the sidewalk and, in fact, turn it into one small profit-making activity, denying others public space. I don't, as I said, I think it's appropriate if there are other venues. But when the parks are closed at night, when the sidewalks, when essentially 75 to 95% of the sidewalk is off limits to people who are sitting down, or they face the prospect of police harassment for doing so. I understand police enforce laws selectively. We have the master of selective enforcement here in the room with us today. That's Deputy Chief Vogel, who I like personally but dislike his policies on. I think this commission has to take responsibility, and I appreciate you giving me the opportunity to at least educate you on a collateral issue. Thank you.
Thanks, Robert.
Julie?
Okay. Thank you. Yes.
I'd like to just inform the commission that the Downtown Association met last Tuesday morning, 2 days ago, and this came to them for the first time, and I watched the same process that we went through, the conscientiousness of the group. They didn't just rubber stamp this thing one way or the other. They came to an agreement. They didn't have enough information, so they agreed to sit in on this meeting, and I want to thank all the members I see from the Downtown Association Board. They're here to get information, and we'll have a special meeting following our meeting to take this up further. So thank you all for being here.
Thanks, Joe. Thank you.
And that bit of information from Joe Ferrara, who's not only on the Downtown Commission, but is also, I guess he was the chair of the Downtown Association, which is the merchant association, which cooked up the original downtown ordinances 12 years ago in 1994, the no sitting law, the no panhandling law, the no political tables law. When I say no, I mean with very severe restrictions that give police great selective enforcement powers. I mean, they couldn't say no, because that kind of a blanket ban completely would be unconstitutional on its face. So what they do instead is they use an almost no, and they then claim that they're simply regulating the time, place, and manner of political tables, panhandlers, sitters, musicians, performers, and so forth. In fact, what they're doing is they're giving the police pretty much the power to do whatever they want to people who are outside. And in other words, you have to essentially make friends with and become kind of the punk boy or girl of the police department. You know, befriend the officer on your beat, you know, is the way to get along. Befriend Wendy Bynes, befriend Pam Bechtel, befriend Sergeant Flippo. Now, obviously, some people don't do that, and there is a group, SAFE, Society for Artistic Freedom and Expression, which every Wednesday night for 2 years has taken back public space. And the police department does steer clear of those groups. Instead, they use the powers the city council, through the Downtown Commission and the Downtown Association, has given them to, you know, harass those the merchants want to harass, which can include people engaged in labor disputes. It can include people protesting the Gap. It can include Huff activists pointing out that the Pacific Trading Company has colluded with the redevelopment agency to remove the entire seating area in front of their that place in Rosie McCann's, where there used to be a planter you could sit on, but they spent $6,000 in police department money to move the little railing out because they didn't like the musicians there. I mean, without any kind of public hearing or notice or discussion, of course, until we started shouting about it. And then, of course, they came and arrested us for having a table there for more than an hour as we gave out literature and tried to get petitions signed against that. So Joe Ferrara is the Downtown Association guy. He's also the owner of Atlantis Fantasy World. No, I like Joe, actually. I've said this many times, and I do. I haven't bought anything from his store in 12 years. He's on the boycott list, which includes the bookshop Santa Cruz, used to include the Cat and Canary, and the ID building when they were around, includes a few other shops, because these shops were particularly prominent in supporting laws that were clearly directed at homeless and poor people. They didn't open up any additional spaces. They just shut down spaces. It's like this 15-minute trespass law. So while I don't patronize Joe's store, I often go in there and kind of, you know, sling the bowl with him and chat with him. And I was rather upset with Joe after after this meeting, which we just saw, because I've mentioned this on the air before. He, after standing up in front of an audience, V for Vendetta, in the pre-showing, saying, "I, fellow anarchists," he said, he in essence voted to support selective enforcement in supporting this law. He Maybe he can explain it more fully. Maybe I can have him on the air. I'll invite him on again. I don't think he's going to be interested, but we'll see. The interesting thing about Joe was, and this downtown association, he's representing here, he's saying the downtown association met several days before. That's the merchant group. And I was at that meeting. I and Bob Patton, another homeless activist who you often hear on this show, he's with the human rights organization and HUF, went to the Downtown Association meeting and spoke at their oral communications period. And we actually influenced a number of people. There were some people, the very wording of this law, which says, drive a car, get the fuck out of your car in 10 minutes, now 15 minutes, or get a $100-plus citation, seemed kind of like an extreme measure in the Santa Cruz area to implement, particularly when it's implemented in all 24 parking lots, which includes about 30 levels. If you look at, you know, some parking lots have 2, 3, and 4 levels. So what was the reason the merchants wanted to know what this is all about? Well, Ferraro was saying, well, come to this meeting, and this is the meeting we're listening to right now, this downtown commission meeting, and you'll find out. And immediately after this meeting, Joe Ferrara held a meeting of the Downtown Association, a second meeting. That's within 2 days of the first Downtown Association meeting, which he held the Tuesday before this Thursday on March 23rd, was this meeting that we're listening to now, the Downtown Commission. And the Downtown Association, he actually held a small meeting. They excluded the public, and they pushed it through, in spite of objections from other members of the Downtown Association, whom I spoke with afterward. So I don't like this process. I don't like what they're. I don't like the substance of what they're doing. I don't like the fact that people I otherwise enjoy the company of doing this kind of shit. So let's hear more, and I'll shut up for a while. But you can talk. 427-3772 is the number to call.
Becky Johnson with HUF, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom. And we're very concerned about the change machines that were put up in front of Borders Books, one at the corner of Elm and Pacific near Union Grove Music, and another one across, I would say, spitting distance across the street at the Metro bus station. All of these were put up in places where young people were gathering downtown, and without public hearings and without public notification. I don't believe this went through the Downtown Commission, although I may be mistaken on that, for the installation of those change machines. We have a particularly egregious law here in Santa Cruz, which prohibits a number of activities, including asking for spare change or sitting down on the sidewalk within 50 feet of not just an ATM, but any machine that change it, that dispenses change, other or that you put money into, basically. I think newspaper racks are accepted from that. 50 feet. If you look at the ordinances across the country, and there are many ordinances in other cities that prohibit activities near ATMs for obvious reasons. But usually they'll have a 15-foot radius around where those activities are prohibited. We have 50 feet. And then to use that 50-foot rule, that's 100 feet across on any given section of sidewalk, the city is putting these in any places where people are attending public, discouraging public assembly. And you know that we have the right as a people to peaceably assemble, obviously, but this is all being done behind the scenes. I believe that the process is bad, and there's a lot of public expense going into this, and it does appear to be a covert anti-homeless policy.
Thank you. Becky, your time's up. Thank you very much.
My name is Glenn Rabin. This would not be on the agenda, but might be, so you can let me know if it is a violation. I was here last week pretty much for the first time, and I also have been short on time, and this has been a week in which I've been able to think about this to some extent. And I would like to offer some assistance in this, because no coalition formed, which I expected because of the good turnout and communication that occurred last week. And I'm wondering if there's any way that I can provide input to Mike Farrell, who I believe is the architect of this ordinance, addressing some of the fundamental issues before it goes all the way to the passage of this ordinance. Is there any means that I, as a public person, may be able to provide input in the short term?
I know that you can provide written correspondence to staff, to city staff, directly to Matt Farrell. And that correspondence can be forwarded as well to the commission as well as city council.
Well, just, you know, paper's a little bit getting a little bit, I mean, this non-disclosed odor is a little bit hard to, you know, it's a little bit tough on paperwork. I've got all my paperwork out as a result of it. Is there any way that I can receive some kind of audience in some way with this department? I'm planning on being able to volunteer to clean up, to try to ameliorate the consequences of this what they're dealing with, basically. Because I pick up and poke on it already over time. I'm not doing that right now.
You can call me at the Public Works Department.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
And it should be noted that Glenn Rabinold, who is a genuine homeless person, often comes to the Huff meetings. The Public Works Department, which Matt Farrell is parking authority in, has published 7 months ago, and we've talked about it on the air, a slanderous four-page publication denouncing homeless scavengers. That is to say, people who recycle, homeless people who recycle. So it's kind of ironic that Glenn wants to talk with Matt Farrell. Maybe not. Maybe if enough people lined up at the door and said, why the hell are you defaming us? They might publish a retraction or rethink their whole philosophy. We'd have to see about that.
Okay. There's no more announcements. We'll move into the item at hand this morning, and that's the proposal for the use of the downtown parking lots and garages. The recommendation is that the Downtown Commission recommend that the City Council adopt an ordinance defining the proper use of parking lots and garages specifically for the purpose of parking vehicles and bicycles. Matt, do you have a staff report?
Since the last meeting, a number of communications have been received, and those have been forwarded to the commission. One from Don Zimmerman regarding the ordinance, three from Sherry Connable, and then we've also included in your packet information we were able to gather regarding incidents recorded in parking maintenance personnel and parking attendants maintenance logs. And they're listed here. The parking attendant reports are from persons who work as attendants in the Soquel and Locust garages. And we have those reports listed from... It's in calendar year, but actually it's August of last year through March of this year. But they were listed in calendar form. And we have them listed by a number of categories: drug use, vandalism, harassment, camping, assault, theft, vehicle break-in, drinking, public urination, defecation, and injury, personal injury. We have seven drug use incidents in those garages, four cases of vandalism, cases of harassment, nine camping incidents, two incidents of reported theft, two vehicle break-ins, one drinking, one public drinking in public, one defecation urination incident, and one injury. We've also gone back and recorded the incidents reported by our parking maintenance staff. This is the parking maintenance staff that works from 5 in the evening to 1:30, 12:30, 1 o'clock in the morning. And this is not the full log from 2005. I wasn't able to collate all those dates. But what it is here is it's the incidents from the beginning of January to the end of June. And in that period of time, there are 88 incidents that are reported over 6 months. So an average of close to 15 incidents a month between, and most of these incidences are reported in our garages, the Locust Garage, the SoCal Garage, the Riverfront Garage, and Cedar Church. Unfortunately, I didn't have an opportunity to sort these reports by incident type or location, but I hope it's helpful to the commission and interested members of the public in terms of addressing these problems. Also, in preparing for this item last week, we did have an opportunity to talk to staff at the Homeless Resource Center about implementation of the ordinance. And the feeling from staff at the Homeless Resource Center is that it's a reasonable thing to adopt an ordinance reflecting the management of the parking lot, that this is not really a facility that is a safe or appropriate place for people to be housed in. It's a parking facility. And their main concern is that we enforce the law evenly.
Okay. Interrupting, that's Matt Farrell, Parking Authority, to make a few comments. If you have comments, 427-3772 is the number to call in. First of all, most directly, the homeless service center, headed by Ken Cole out there at 115 Coral Street, if they actually did endorse this, they should be deeply ashamed. And I haven't talked to Ken Cole, and I've kind of, I don't think he's returned calls to from the Human Rights Organization yet either, although I'm not sure. But you'll notice that Farrell kind of neatly dodges the question. He does say if it's fairly enforced. Of course, the problem with this kind of law, and the most obvious problem to start with, is it won't be fairly enforced. You have to tell mothers nursing their babies. You have to tell men changing the diapers of babies. You have to tell people simply sleeping in their car, middle class people who are resting in their car. You have to tell elderly people waiting in their car, you can't be here because you've been here for more than 15 minutes. And I just cannot believe that that is going to happen. Unless, of course, Huff sends in a squad of people to start harassing people and saying, hey, this is the law, which is what we talked about doing when the 2002 downtown ordinances passed. The 2002 ordinances were the ones that said you have to move your political table along every hour, even if you have, for example, boycotting a particular business or have a labor dispute with a particular business. That it's, you have to, you can't be there. The First Amendment only exists for 59 minutes. In the 60th minute, you have to leave. Or at least you can't have a table there anymore. Come on. Doesn't pass the straight face test, as Mike Rutkin likes to say, although he voted for it. Now, this particular ordinance we're talking about that they're discussing here at the Downtown Commission, did give rise to some questions about, is there a crime wave that's requiring this? So what's the deal? What's the story with the police situation? Well, Matt Farrell is giving us the details. The details are, as I understand it, maybe I missed this because my attention was distracted a few moments ago, but seven cases of drug use, two theft, two vehicle, vandalism, one drinking, nine camping. It looks like a total of 27 pieces of criminal behavior over an entire year in four parking garages. And that's assuming we're talking about the garages, not the parking lots, and that wasn't clear to me either. But let's assume it's just the garages. That amounts to about 29 over a year. It's about a little more than 2.5 crimes per month, or per parking garage, 3/4 of a crime per month. Doesn't sound like a crime wave to me, It really doesn't. It sounds like the opposite. It sounds like these statistics are embarrassing to hear. We have a caller. Hi, you're on Free Radio with Robert.
Yeah, I was puzzling over that, too, whether this data was from the parking garages or the surface lots. And I'm pretty sure that this is the supplemental information for the surface lot.
I don't know if
that's... Because the original report that we saw with the 541 calls for service, that was only for the four parking structures. And then the downtown commission said, well, you want us to rule on this that's going to cover not just the structures, it's also going to cover all these surface lots that City of Santa Cruz has too, and you don't have any data on those. So this is Matt Farrell reporting back with the data on just the surface lots.
Well, you know,
so it's supplemental to the 541. At least that's my take.
Well, I'm looking this over because I actually have the written material, and this mentioned we're talking about the material he gave us is Soquel Front Garage, Locust Garage. These look like the reports from actually just two garages, Soquel Front Garage and the Locust Garage.
Oh, so it isn't the surface lot.
Yeah, because I see here the grand total, 9 camping, 7 drug use, 4 vandalism. And so either they only covered these two garages, the Soquel and the Locust Garage, or there weren't any reports from the other two garages.
Or maybe these were the complaints that the maintenance workers themselves...
No, the maintenance workers supplied. I have the second document here.
Oh, really?
I'm well supplied with documents.
Oh, right.
They actually handed...
this is getting more and more confusing.
Yeah,
maybe you can sort it out.
They handed them out at the March 23rd meeting. This is the parking maintenance log. And, again, that was summarized by Farrell, and it's actually described in detail. I'm looking it over Saturday, January 8th, and Locust, 2 persons in garage. January 16th, Soquel, loose car. I'm not sure what that means. Saturday, January 22nd, 2005, in Soquel, camping. So he talked about two kinds of incidents, police reports over the entire year, and then parking lot attendance concerns over the six-month period from January to June, during their period of time from 5:30 in the, I guess it's the afternoon, to 1:30 in the morning, if I understand that properly.
So some of those would be the same. They would be duplicated.
Well,
if a
it's
parking
possible.
Structure called the, you know, for a call for service
possible.
To the police,
they could be.
Then
could be,
but it would obviously be on both reports.
The only one serious enough to merit police attention, however, seem to be these 29 incidents over the entire year in all 4 parking lot garages. I mean, to me, that's a monumentally small number.
29 incidences of
camping, drug use, and even the phraseology is the kinds of crimes talked about. For the major crime, camping, isn't a crime. It's a survival activity.
Right.
I mean, you know, so it's
certainly a victimless crime.
It's just, you know, I mean, it's. I'm just amazed that with this kind of stat, the downtown commission could proceed to, you know, go ahead with voting this in 5-1. And then, even if you look at the poor parking lot attendance, and I was somewhat sympathetic, more so than you, I think, when I spoke the week before, who, you know, they gave an eloquent, you know, expression of their concerns that they got hypodermic needles there. Of course, this is the same kind of terror stories that we hear from conservative neighborhood residents, too. And it's no fun to find a hypodermic needle. It's a menace. It's a danger.
I've never found a hypodermic needle.
I haven't either. But
and I've been in Santa Cruz 26
right, but I'm not saying people,
6 years.
But you're not saying people don't find them. I mean, I imagine they do. You know, I mean, I don't think they're making it up or planting them or anything like that. But in terms of, we don't have any numbers. How many were found? You know, over what period of time?
Although I have seen them. Some of the people that were cleaning up the riverbank showed
the
a bucket,
you know,
and there were maybe about 9 or 10 in there.
Right.
And I have photographs.
Right,
of them,
right.
So.
I mean, so they exist. But the question is, you know, 29 police incidents over an entire year in 4 parking lot garages, and then 88 incidents in a six-month period that don't even necessarily rise to criminal behavior, but express real concerns of parking lot attendance. Should that be the basis for excluding the entire community from these lots? Now, you obviously don't think so because you spoke against it too. But it's just
a draconian measure.
It's weird. It's just weird.
That seems to be very thinly veiled, described to accomplish the purpose of driving homeless people into the rain.
And it also increases police power at a time when I would have thought, not just with our own Santa Cruz Spygate, but with, you know, the whole national scandal of increasing the National Security Authority's power, increasing Guantanamo military power. The guy is, you know, the young kid who's now being tried, first time in history, any court has tried a young person, I guess in U.S. history, as a military commission. He refused to go today, I understand, in Guantanamo. I mean, to have Santa Cruz police having their power expanded and expanded and expanded, I think, first of all, it puts an unfair burden on the Santa Cruz Police Department. I mean, it makes them the villains in this whole piece, when in fact the villains are the people who want to, you know, make a criminal situation out of what is essentially a survival situation for some. And,
well, those
you know,
are the only people that are going to be writing citations. They're going to be police officers,
right?
CFOs. They're the only people that have that authority to write a citation.
Well, not if Mike Rotkin and Miss Cynthia Matthews have their way. They're trying to get two more park rangers to have power.
I guess, you know, park rangers and as far as we want to go, that even a certain fire department personnel,
right,
can also,
right,
issue citations,
uh-huh,
for violations of the fire code, presumably.
Yeah. Any other thoughts on this before I continue with the tape?
Yeah, I wanted to talk a little bit about the maintenance workers, the two maintenance workers who testified, and where you were kinder to them, I think, than I was in my public speaking. But I was really...
Hang on. This is testimony that people can hear if they want to go back and listen to the archive shows on huffsantacruz.org. But, yeah, these are the two workers...
Is this something that... So you've already played that?
I've already played it, so people can hear it, so if you want to listen to it at some point. It won't be played today, but go ahead.
All right. Well, one of the maintenance workers got up and she said that she had discovered some homeless guy with his laptop plugged in up on one of the upper floors of the Locust Street parking garage, where he was watching porno and getting hyped up, ready to go and act out on it. I thought that was one of the most vicious characterizations of a person logging onto the internet and plugging into a socket that they didn't pay the PG&E for.
Well, actually, you know, it's interesting. There was a Huff meeting that happened after that testimony was given by the parking lot attendant, where a relatively clean-cut guy who said he's been homeless and living downtown for several years outside... He has a laptop himself. He described at the Huff meeting how he was harassed by CSO Pam Bechtel for being in the parking lot structure. He wasn't hooked up to any kind of electrical thing, but he was he was using a wireless connection with another building.
He was Wi-Fiing.
I guess so. You know, I'm not familiar with that.
Brilliant. Cite him for that because
right.
He opened his laptop and the internet was available in that location?
I guess so. I mean, I don't understand it entirely, but that's his account was that first the parking lot attendants told him to leave, and he said, why? This is a public area. I mean, what am I doing wrong? And they called the cops, and CSO Pam Bechtel, you know, came trudging up there and whipped out her ticket book, and he agreed to leave voluntarily, but he advised her that she, you know, she didn't have any right to do that to him. He then, the next day, he was plugged in, he said, to some public utility pole, which he thought was legal, and uh-huh. She came by and she said, I've warned you about plugging in before giving you a citation, and he got a citation for that, and that, in fact, was the reason he came to the Huff meeting to ask for our help and how in dealing with that.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I don't know. There may have been another case of some person threatening to masturbate in the parking lot garage after getting hyped up on porno. I suspect
sure.
That it was this incident that has been magnified, and maybe not. I mean, you know, these things happen, but clearly if this were a real problem, it would have gotten a lot more media coverage. You know, it would have been hyped up big time, and I think, again, we're talking about smearing, you know, establishing a climate of fear and revulsion in order to give to pass the latest brainchild of Matt Farrell or Danette Shoemaker or, you know, Police Chief Scary. I don't know.
Well, I wanted to talk about the issue of plugging into an outlet at a public building someplace.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
You know, I'm not sure if maybe people have had to charge their cell phones and that they would plug into that if they would think they were stealing or if they would get a citation for that.
I don't know.
It would be really hard to prove that there was any actual expense accrued by the city. From what I understand, the difference between plugging one little item in, you couldn't even register it on your your PG&E bill. You couldn't even, it's a such a minute amount of electricity expended. You might as well cite them for reading a book under a light bulb in a public place. Because that, I mean, why do they have an outlet there if it's not to be used by both the maintenance people and the public at large within reason? And, you know, plugging in a laptop in while you're sitting there using it for, doesn't seem to me to be the any kind of measurable crime.
Well, I know that I haven't.
I look at it as the person as being resourceful.
I haven't seen it. I haven't seen it posted. Certainly, I mean, I've been. I see a lot of new signs posted downtown. We're going to see new no smoking signs posted in San Lorenzo Park and Grant Street Park. But I haven't seen any sign you can't use these electrical outlets. This is city property. But you know, maybe it is a law. You know, and I don't know what the deal is with that.
The outlet is there. The drinking fountain is on the sidewalk. If you go over and drink it, are you stealing water from the city?
I hear you. Shall I roll on with this, or is there more you want to say?
Roll away.
Okay. Thanks for calling in.
Sure.
And if you want to call in, you can. 427-3772. Lest we be accused of being one-sided, please give your side. This is Free Radio Santa Cruz at 101.1 FM and freakradio.org. You're listening to the Downtown Commission's final swift boating fast tracking of the 15-minute trespass. Stay away from the parking lots and garages unless you got your car or bicycle with you, and then only for 15 minutes, coming up April 11th on the afternoon session of City Council, I suspect. Not clear on that. More info on Sunday.
Answer any questions that the commission has. Oh, and I would say that if you look at the incident
reports
from the parking maintenance people, there are a large number of camping incidents, but there are also incidents that our folks are talking about in terms of people in suspicious vehicles, encounters between individuals that and sometimes turn into fights, public drinking problems, people hanging out in the lots in bicycles, which then have been, you know, anecdotally tied to vehicle vandalisms and burglaries, parked on the roof of a garage. You know, not obviously the most logical place where you would park your bicycle. So these are the concerns that were brought to me by our staff, and these are the concerns we're trying to raise in addressing this issue of policy for the commission. Be happy to answer any questions, should the commission have.
Thank you, Matt. Are there other staff that you would like to have give a presentation today, or should we move into the discussion of the
we'll
item?
We'll answer any questions, okay, should you have them.
Okay, let's start with Sheila and then Kathy.
Sheila Coonerty, formerly chair of the Downtown Commission and now co-chair of the American Civil Liberties Union. She's also part of the Coonerty family. Take it from there.
I just wanted to start out with first a clarification. I want to make sure we are focused on what the end result today, and then a request. The clarification is we have the choice of sending this with our approval to City Council, sending it with reservations and requests for more information or more tinkering with the law, which we could specify, or sending it with disapproval. Is that right? Those are our choices, Matt.
What was your last one?
Sending it. That we don't approve of it.
Or we could send it back with no comment one way or the other. So we've deliberated. Here's the information we've had. And send it back to them.
Okay.
I brought that up at the last meeting, but I think the general consensus of this group was a neutral position isn't what the council wanted from us.
Okay. And my request would be, given the kind of email I've gotten and some information, I actually just got some information this morning from the ACLU lawyer as I was walking out the door. Thank goodness she sent it. That has to do with the lots. I would like to request that in our talking we talk separately about the garages and the lots, because from the comments I've gotten and the legal position, it seems to be different. And it might help us to kind of clarify where the problems are and where they're not. So I don't know if anybody else feels that way, but that's just my suggestion.
Comment. Sheila Coonerty here and Joe Ferrara are misstating the situation in terms of what they can do with this particular piece of shit law, frankly, is what it is. The special interest legislation that I learned later from Matt Farrell was cooked up by parking lot attendants and beat police officers. Those are the geniuses that gave us this whole thing. They can say, we have looked at the stats and we found that 29 crimes per year, where nine of those are camping crimes, do not constitute a crime wave. And we'd like to know what the, you know, whether, how this compares with criminal behavior elsewhere in town during this period. Those stats were not presented. But of course, in other words, we can ask again for more time, saying we can't give you an intelligent recommendation also unless we consider some alternatives to this in terms of the actual problems presented, rather than simply a kind of prefabricated law sprung on us and thrown at us, and we have to essentially react to the law. They could, of course, report it forward negatively, but as many of us at Oral Communications at the in public comment period said, not in this version, not in this particular day, but the week before, this would amount to giving the city council the green light, because in essence it would have gone through the downtown commission. The only way to stop this or to force the city council to say we don't care what the downtown commission is doing, we're going to proceed, it's such an emergency, that they could put it on themselves. Any council member could always do that. But when they forward it to city council with a negative recommendation, with a positive recommendation, with a neutral recommendation, with reservations, whatever, that completes that step of the process and indicates that it has had some kind of significant scrutiny. Now, there has some more stats have been brought out, but one would think that the obvious, and there no more stats were brought up about the parking lots, and there were many parking lots, two or three times as many parking lots as there are parking garages. Yet this law applies to both parking lots and parking garages. And the recommendation that they eventually voted out essentially was, we like the law, 15 minutes, however, instead of 10 minutes, give a warning and look at it again in a year. Plus, we have some other concerns, but that's okay with us. Complete abdication of real responsibility, even in terms of the information they had heard. Also, I want to point out that Jim Brown, the seventh member of the Downtown Commission, who actually did the most analysis of the downtown ordinances and originally kind of wanted to, had information to give on this and was supposed to provide testimony at this session in absentia because he's not there. He was out of the country. His testimony was not presented. Just a detail, but an example of how they're on this, you know, runaway train, and they're not jumping off. They're just waving the flag and rolling right ahead and trying to say, well, you know, we got some reservations, but here you go, City Council. Here's this nice law for you to pass.
Okay. Can I get clear on that? Go ahead.
I had a question, actually.
Kathy Bisbee, the only critic of the law.
Liability in... Actually, a lot of businesses that own garages have had a lot of legal cases brought against them for criminal activity that happened in the garages. And I had a question of our legal staff. Because the garages are city property and we're making a law regarding the use of the garages, I'm wondering how it affects the city liability for prevention of crimes occurring within or at a city property. I'm wondering if the city is liable if the crimes occur on our property as a result of our negligence. For example, if the police are only coming through once every 10 hours and something happens 5 hours into the shift, are we liable for that activity?
All of those cases are, you know, driven by their own particular facts.
The city attorney, John Barasoni.
That hold, there's one case out of City College in San Francisco where a woman was sexually assaulted in a parking lot. It became one of the leading cases about this particular fact scenario. And the lot wasn't well lit. There was shrubbery that also obscured views. And there had been events in the past similar to this, so the court determined that under those circumstances where a public entity is on notice of an unsafe condition in public property, in sufficient time to do something about it, and it's not done, and then that type of injury occurs, you can make an argument. The court will allow a case like that to go to trial as a dangerous condition of public property case. And, you know, things, the factors that come into play are, you know, what type, how much notice did we have? What type of events were we on notice of? Was this event sufficiently similar to that type? What type of resources did we have to prevent that? How feasible was it to prevent it in the future and things of that nature? So the answer to your question is that a lawsuit can be brought on that basis. Whether it's successful or not is, you know, entirely driven by the facts of the lawsuit itself.
Just out of curiosity, is the case that you're referring to the Sharon P. versus Armand case?
I don't recall the name of it, but if it came out of City College in San Francisco, that's the case I'm referring to.
Commentary. This would seem to be an argument in favor of closer police scrutiny when there is some dangerous condition in the parking lot garages, something which is not proved, although there is one of the big concerns that was raised, and that we raised again in this discussion, I believe, is the perception of unsafeness that women have, and vulnerable elders perhaps, and even young people, in some circumstances in parking lot garages. You know, it's just the dark places, you're alone, it's late at night, and that sort of thing. And the best way to address this. Well, the idea here being put forward, the thing that the city is trying to sell, the city staff, of course, Matt Farrell, and you'll soon hear Kevin Vogel talking, the deputy chief of police, is that a law criminalizing people being there, denuding the area of people, will be a way of getting rid of the bad gals and guys and getting rid of the bad people and helping the parking lot attendants. They are not, however, proposing increased police patrols. They are not really proposing spending the money on surveillance cameras and better lighting and some sort of voluntary citizen cell phone communication with each other, citizen watch group, nothing like that. It's only a new law that will allow people to be criminalized who are there, who are otherwise now engaging in innocent behavior. And that, of course, is one of the other primary concerns that I've raised repeatedly. But it hasn't been addressed. How much innocent behavior is going to be eliminated here? And isn't that a real consideration? And isn't there some way of really researching that by polling people? Do you want this to happen? I mean, how much time do you spend in parking lot garages and so forth and lots? Food Not Bombs, for instance. Here's a caller. Hi, you're on Free Radio.
Hey, Robert. Hey. How's it going?
Good. What's happening?
I just wanted to call in and comment real quick. You know, I ran into a friend of mine downtown this week who works for the city, and you know, they're more notorious than you can possibly imagine. I mean, it's so bad that he told me that the reason why they're not increasing the police patrols is because they want to use, you know, the meter maids that drive the little carts around to help, like, drive around and, you know, keep an extra eye out in these parking garages. And if they see anything at all, I mean fucking anything, Robert, they want them to jump on their radios and call the cops. I mean, he looked at me and he goes, Megan, it's so bad. They want us to fucking take people's houses. And I'm going, what? He goes, yeah. He goes, they want us to take people's houses, people's cars, whatever we can get them for. And I just went, oh, my God. So, anyway, it just made me think of that when you said that. But I'm going to go ahead and get off the phone and
Let me ask you first, what do you mean by take people's houses?
Like, you know, I guess he didn't really go into detail, you know, because he was on duty and I was kind of leaving. We just spoke for a minute, but I guess, if they see anything illegal going on at all, you know, call the cops so they can get them for everything they can get. That's what it sounds like to me. I don't know. I'll probably talk to him again this weekend. He said he's off this weekend, and so I'll probably give him a call, and I'll ask him when I talk to him. Say, hey, man, what did you mean by that when you said, you know, and get a little more in depth. But that was my perception on it. But, you know, that's Santa Cruz.
Sounds
police
good.
And city council for you. Fucking okay. Liberal, whatever.
All right, well, keep us informed.
Aggressive.
He might have meant that, you know, some people live in their vehicles, and if that might be their house,
oh,
that might
yeah,
be taken.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, you're right.
Possible.
You know what? That could be possible, because then he said he made the comment that he said, too, he goes, yeah, he said, and they said that if we see somebody sleeping, Jay wants to call cops, and his and he, you know, he came out and said, yeah, right, want me to call cops, why, so, you know, they can come and fucking, like, you know, make the person have to go out in the rain. So, yeah, you're right, he might have meant, you know, what you just said, but yeah,
this person was an employee of the city who you talked to, or?
Yeah, he works for the city, he's a meter maid.
Now, did he tell you that there was some concern among other meter maids that they didn't really want to do this, or were they supportive, were they neutral, what was their position?
He didn't say anything about them, but, you know, I mean, he's, you know, obviously, like, frowning on it, and, you know, comment about our police department this last summer, one of the other meter maids was down here, gave somebody a ticket, I guess, and they didn't like it, and, I guess she walked away from her cart to go check out some of the other cars and came back and all her tires were slashed. Well, she called the police and reported it, and none of the officers would even come down here and back her up. You know what they told her? They told her that they were responding to a fight down here at the Ideal Bar and Grill. But guess what? This friend of mine said he went by there and there were like 7 cop cars at the Ideal Bar and Grill, but they were like obviously all inside, probably having lunch or coffee or whatever, and not one of them would even come
down. Wait a minute. Now, I can't believe that our police force would do, for example, what it did in 2003 when 7 squad cars were involved in arresting people for jaywalking downtown as they crossed from borders. I mean, that wouldn't really happen, would it?
Jesus. But, yeah.
Hey, thank you for your call.
Yeah, anyway.
And moving along there, sorry to cut you off there, Megan. I appreciate the call. The issue of the kind of public spaces we have and how we can use them, and whether the going after real problems in the public spaces is an important thing to do. I don't dispute that. The question is, what's the magnitude of these problems, and what's the best way to go about it, and what other, they like to use the phrase, I'll use it too, unintended consequences are going to happen? And are they really unintended, or do they just don't give a goddamn? I mean, that's the problem here. I mean, you have an increasing constriction of space in Santa Cruz for all kinds of reasons. I mean, people can't afford to spend as much time in the cafes as they used to because prices are higher. Sometimes cafes are more militant about getting you out. I don't have a lot of stats on that or a lot of sense of that, but, you know, I think it's probably happening. And, of course, on the public sidewalks, it's illegal to be on 95% of the sidewalk in a seated position, unless you're bringing your own chair, and even then it's illegal to be on 75% of the sidewalk, though 3 benches have returned to Pacific Avenue, 2 in front of Quiznos and 1 in front of the Del Mar Theater near the Downtown Informant Center. There are still more disappearing than are reappearing. So there are problems that are not being addressed, and we have this new situation where there's absolutely no input or report or concern about how much innocent behavior is not necessarily going to be cited by police, not necessarily is even going to be harassed, but is going to be prevented by people being put in fear of a hassle from police, a hassle from a meter maid, a hassle from a parking lot attendant, a hassle from a vigilante citizen walking to his car. Oh, I see a person over there standing there. I think they better be removed. They shouldn't be here. Why? Because our new law lets us do that, even if they're not doing anything wrong, even if they're contributing to the Santa Cruz community by maybe having a spirited discussion with somebody in a car. Who knows? I mean, the question is how much good behavior are people being told to exclude now? And where can that behavior go? Particularly if it's raining, you know? Where can that behavior go? I mean, some people can go into their houses, some people can go into their shops. Some people can't. And again, I am concerned particularly with that group of people. That's a group of people that we are assured it's okay because the homeless service center, Ken Cole, who Matt Farrell tells me he talked to 3 or 4 weeks ago, had, you know, said as long as it's fairly enforced, everything's going to be okay. Somebody needs to put through a couple of calls to Ken Cole, 458. Let's see what that number is, 458... I'll get the number later, and ask him just what the hell he's doing if he's representing the interests of homeless people to say that. Or maybe I don't understand. Maybe Ken Cole hasn't told the center for the last year to kick people out during the day and kick people out during the night as well. You can't be at the homeless center, service center after 5 or 6 o'clock. And now you can't be there at the day during the day unless you are, you know, doing some business. And I also understand unless it's raining, in which case they're more lenient. So, I mean, you know, good for them. But there's this attitude of driving people out of public spaces. And we have to ask ourselves, in some cases, when is it merited and what other consequences ensue when we do that? On with the show. Here's the Downtown Commission and more from them. More from you, too, if you call in 427-3772.
Joe?
I had a couple of questions for the police department for clarification. One of the things that was brought up was that an increased presence seems to reduce the amount of criminal activity. So just a couple of quick questions so we all know a little bit more about this. Currently, how many positions are budgeted and how many are actually occupied in the current city budget by how many physical officers do we have?
Are you referring to the entire police department,
right,
or just the downtown unit?
Just the entire police department, for starters.
Currently, there is 94 positions. Actually, 94 positions. 93 of them are funded. We
and
have one defunded position, and right now, I believe we're down about 11 positions. So that would put us roughly at about 82 officers working.
Now, about the downtown, I know there's an A and B side. Would you illuminate on that for us?
Sure. We work an A team, B team schedule, so we can provide coverage 7 days a week. The officers work 4 days a week with an overlap day on Wednesday. So you've got one team, the A team, working Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and you've got the B team working Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday. There's one supervisor assigned to each team. So you've got a supervisor down there 7 days a week from 10 o'clock in the morning until 8 o'clock at night. On the A side of the week, we currently have three officers assigned, one working 10 in the morning until 8 o'clock at night. And we've got two working from noon until 10, and that would be Sunday through Wednesday. We also have a community service officer assigned to that side of the week, and she works 10 to 8.
So there's no coverage after 10 p.m.
on the A side.
A side of Sunday through Wednesday.
Correct, correct. On the B side of the week, which is traditionally our busier side of the week, we have a supervisor, again, working 10 in the morning until 8 o'clock at night.
Mm-hmm.
We have a community service officer. She's working 9 in the morning until 7 o'clock at night. And then we have a regular patrol officer working from 10 in the morning until 8 o'clock at night. And we have two additional officers that come in at 2 o'clock in the afternoon and work until midnight. And one of those officers is currently in our metro position. That position is funded 50% by the Santa Cruz Metropolitan Transit District. So they spend the majority of their time down in the, I guess it would be the 800, 900, 1,000 blocks of Pacific Avenue, with a particular emphasis on the Metro Center itself. But the Metro Center has been gracious, or the Metro has been gracious enough to allow some leeway in the area that that officer works. So we actually have them cover three blocks of Pacific Avenue because they recognize that some of the problems that occur at the Metro actually spill out into the adjoining areas.
So to be clear, on the busy side, the B side, Wednesday through Thursday, you have one officer from 10 in the morning till 8 p.m.
That's correct.
And you have a CSO who has the ability to write citations.
That's correct.
Whereas the downtown hosts do not have that ability.
Correct.
So, and then you have another officer coming on from 2 to 12 a.m.
Actually, two officers.
Two officers.
One of them is the Metro officer.
So there's one officer daytime, busy site, 10 to 8, and two officers. One of them is the Metro officer, who's more dedicated in the south end, from 2 p.m. till 12 a.m.
Correct. And there's one other piece of information I should share with you. We actually are budgeted for a fourth patrol officer position on the B side of the week. About a month and a half, 2 months ago, we had to take that person and deploy them elsewhere because of staffing issues at the police department. So if we were up to full staff downtown, we would have four officers working on the busy side of the week and three officers working on the slow side of the week. But given the current staffing levels, we have three officers on both sides of the week.
Would that fourth officer on the B side be in the day shift or the evening shift?
That officer was working in, I believe it was a 10 to 8 shift.
So it would be two during the day and two in the evening.
That's
9 to 7. I mean, right. Yeah, 9 a.m. to 7.
On the B side, 10 to 8. 10 to 8 on the A side.
And 10 to 8 on the B side. Mm-hmm. Very helpful. Thank you.
You're very welcome.
Sheila has a follow-up question.
Additional questions. What is the area that the officers patrol for the downtown?
The downtown boundaries cover the area between Cedar Street on the west boundary and Front Street on the east boundary. And on the northern boundary, they go clear to Water Street as far as the town clock. And on the southern boundary, they extend down to Spruce Street.
And do you know the area of the entire... You probably don't know this, but I couldn't figure out either. The area of the entire city of Santa Cruz?
As far as...
The area is.
How large it is?
Wise.
I think it's about 10 or 11 square miles.
10 or 11 square miles. Okay. I had one other one, but I forgot.
Okay. I have a question as well. Can you tell us how many times you're actually circulating now through the current four garages, as well as checking the surface lots in the downtown business?
That's Julie Shattuck asking a question.
I don't have that information in front of me. I know the sergeant last week talked about one. I think he said the officers are through the garages about once per shift. I'm assuming he meant each officer goes through the garages once per shift, so actually that would give you, you know, hopefully three separate patrols through each parking lot or parking structure per day on both sides of the week. But he's not here today, and I don't have all that information.
In the event that this ordinance is passed, it would be critical that there would be more police presence in those garages or availability to issue warnings or citations. What is the capacity currently of the police department to respond to any increased calls based on this new ordinance?
For the most part, we're still responding to everything that every call that comes in. We're not to the point yet where we're actually not able to respond to calls. Sometimes it's a delayed response because there's other more higher priority calls occurring at the same time. But I don't foresee that as an issue. The other thing I think we need to mention here is, in addition to the downtown officers, we also have the central beat officer that's driving around in a car, and that central beat is staffed 24 hours a day by a beat car, and those officers are through the parking garages and parking lots on a routine basis also, in addition to the downtown unit officers. So that's additional coverage that we have.
Okay. Do we have more questions?
Follow-ups for this particular
issue? Sheila and Kat.
Okay. One of the questions that a lot of people asked after the last meeting was, why can't the police circulate through the lots more often? So you're saying they do actually by car. Somebody does by car frequently during the day?
Yeah, well, I don't know how frequently, but there is a central beat officer that works 24 hours a day, and I know those officers are through those garages in their patrol cars.
Okay, so people's concern is, why isn't that enough to deal with illegal behavior? I'm wondering if you have an answer for that. If the officers are circulating through the garages, why isn't that enough to catch illegal behavior?
Well, I think a lot of it has to do with the fact that people see us coming. You know, I mean, we drive around in a marked police car, which is essentially the city's billboard. And when they see us coming, whatever illegal activity either is occurring in progress or is about to occur stops altogether. People typically don't commit crimes right in front of us. So it's, you know, when we actually catch somebody in the act, then we can make an arrest. Or when a citizen observes a crime being committed, if they're willing to sign a complaint, if the crime happens to be an infraction or a misdemeanor, then we can take action on it. But absent those factors, our hands are tied.
And am I clear that after midnight there is no one downtown, no officers?
After midnight, during the current shift that we're in, which I know we just had the first day of spring this week, but we don't actually transition into our summer schedule until the latter part of May. And at that point, then we'll start scheduling our downtown officers a little bit later in the evening. Typically, we have them work till 2 o'clock in the morning during the summer shift. But right now, after 12 o'clock at night on the B side of the week, we don't have any officers specifically assigned to the downtown. But remember, we've got our patrol officers out there, and the central beat actually encompasses the downtown beat, so you've got that central beat car working 24 hours a day, and that officer that drives that car will patrol the downtown area during those off hours.
And you're listening to Deputy Chief Vogel answering questions from downtown commissioners on March 23rd. I'm replaying this in order to give folks some heads up for the April 11th slam, wham, bam, get your asses out of the parking lots and garages unless you have a car or a bicycle. And then only for 15 minutes are you allowed to the grace period. That's coming up. Phone number to here to call in. 427-3772. Not asked of Deputy Chief Vogel is the very obvious question: is there a crime wave that justifies this kind of massive exclusion of public space? Does the police department want this law? I suspect, you know, who knows? He might say sure, but you know, at least we get him to give us his answer with a straight face that the 29 incidents last year in four parking lot garages constitutes a crime wave, none of which was serious enough to be involve any felonies, as far as I know. So maybe, who knows, maybe a drug-dealing felony. You know, Ryan Coonerty's biggest concern when I had a private meeting with him after the Downtown Association meeting several days before this Downtown Commission meeting was stealing of bicycles and bicycle theft and the fact that bicycles may be being repaired in the parking lot garages. And I said, well, why don't you go after that then as a particular problem without criminalizing everybody else and everything else? And he said, oh, well, we'd have to criminalize too many other things, well, like camping. Well, camping is already criminalized. Well, we'd have to enforce it, you know. And here again was another sticking point. Julie Shattuck, the chair of the Downtown Commission, said, well, if you're going to pass this law, there has to be more police resources. I suppose that's a bid for more police resources, which I don't favor in this situation, unless I am convinced there's a crime wave, which I'm not. You know, I'm not convinced of that. But even if you know, you are convinced that it's a good idea to have more police coming through more often, I mean, that's a better alternative to making it completely illegal to be there and turning every would-be busybody into a junior G-man who can then make, you know, who can harass the homeless person of his choice who happens to duck in there out of the rain. Make a citizen's arrest, even. Hey, it's nasty stuff, folks. Pretty nasty stuff. And, you know, a call came in while I was playing this tape from a longtime caller that drew my attention again to a story in Wednesday's Santa Cruz Sentinel. City aims to clean up parks. Some areas may become off-limits if problems persist. And then there's a rather nasty quote from Pat Kittle, who's described as a state parks volunteer. Most of this is the responsibility of homeless campers. They're disgusting bums. I'm not going to sugarcoat it. And this is an article by Shanna McCord on the front page of the Sentinel. A disgraceful article, I might say. I haven't had the time or the energy to respond to it. I hope somebody does, because I sat through this two-hour city council meeting, which the article reports on, and which concerns, you know, the same kinds of issues as parking lots and garages. In this case, talking about giving Danette Shoemaker, the head of the Parks and Rec Department, the power to set park hours, giving her $50,000 for a park cleanup, two more rangers to go enforce and ticket those bums that are just spoiling the environment or just being there or sleeping. I mean, sleeping just spoils the environment. And the problem with the story in the Sentinel is that it doesn't discuss the fact or reveal the fact that what the calls in the – it reveals a jump in police calls. But there's a jump in police calls, according to at least two members of the public, one of them being Scott Graham, a local activist, and the other being one of the people who is actually a resident around San Lorenzo Park. The residents around San Lorenzo Park have formed a vigilante organization to call in repeatedly whenever they see anything they regard as suspicious, hence a jump in the number of calls, or possibly that's one explanation. One doesn't see this, of course, in the article by Shanna McCord, nor does one see a breakdown, again, in terms of the kinds of crimes that allegedly are appearing. We heard them talk about drugs and needles, but when you look at the police report, it talks about marijuana busts, which was never mentioned at this city council meeting among the speakers. I tried to, you know, get through a number of things, but I had only 2 minutes. There were some speakers who did use the H word, the homeless word, in a positive sense, saying if you're going to provide no emergency shelter to speak of and not allow people to shelter themselves in campgrounds, self-contained, self-policed campgrounds, then they're going to sleep where they can. They're going to congregate where they must. And that's what happens. At least, and if you're not going to have public bathrooms, you're going to have piles of crap and people urinating. And this is sort of, you know, the elementary logic of things. We have, you know, these stories of poo-poo and pee-pee, the kinds of stuff that Mayor Mike Rodkin used to smear protesters at the front, at the City Hall protest in 1996, 10 years ago, almost 10 years ago today. Yeah, it was in its second month, I believe, or first month, actually. Instead of dealing with the issues, they're trying to raise things that sort of turn off middle-class people and make them say, well, let's give the police more power to clean up this mess, when, of course, that means destroying the homes of homeless people, driving them out, possibly killing them. Because when you send people out into the cold, like C.J. Stock, a musician who will be driven out into the cold from his place you normally see him playing at across from Cloud's restaurant, he might get pneumonia again, which he already got a month and a half ago from being out in the cold, you know, and not being able to shelter himself well because he has to worry half the time about hiding from the cops. I'm not talking about CJ particularly. I'm talking about the average person. But CJ did get pneumonia, as have other homeless people whom I've spoken to recently. So these are all the consequences that these clowns at the city council meeting and the folks at the Downtown Commission have very little explicit interest in. To allow a statement from the Homeless Resource Center, the Homeless Service Center, Ken Cole, that this law would, that it's really, you know, since parking lots aren't safe and aren't really ideal shelters for people, it's perfectly okay to drive them out into the rain. It would hard, I mean, I don't think an individual should be able to retain his position if he's saying such a thing. But that is what Matt Farrell is making it look like is being said here. Although, you know, that's the implication of his communication with Ken Cole. Ken Cole should have been invited to this meeting, urged to this meeting by members of the Downtown Commission. I don't think any of them did. At least I didn't hear from them. I think Paul Brindell, the Community Action Board, Shelter Project should have been urged. I think other homeless activists should have been urged. I think homeless people should have been consulted as a group. And I think, more important, other alternate solutions need to be looked at. Let's hear more, however, from the Downtown Commission and the Police Department. I find the discussions with Deputy Chief Vogel, as I said, interesting. I mean, it's interesting to hear when the beat officers are here and there and so forth, who's downtown on the A side, who's downtown on the B side. But the real question, of course, another real question that wasn't answered was, what's their response time? You know, do they keep a record of that? Do they have that they can show us that they are responding promptly to real criminal concerns down there? And if they're not responding promptly to real criminal concerns down there, then what makes us think that they're going to respond to trespass complaint concerns? Or again, I guess they're going to assume that we are a compliant, huddling, shivering, frightened, we mind our own business, fuck the poor kind of people. So we're not going to be concerned enough. We'll follow the rules, and if they post a law that says you can't use these spaces, First Amendment no longer applies, can't assemble here at all, we're going to say, oh, that's okay, because we don't want to get a ticket, you know? And that will be the sole extent of the kind of increased enforcement. It'll just be the threat, the fear. Increasing the fear in this community is going to produce a better result. It's going to drive away the rapists and the assaulters, because they won't go into the parking lot garages because they'll see the no trespassing signs. Moving right along.
And one last one. Many people pointed out that 500 calls out of 75,000 is such a minute number. But when I tried to figure it out by the size of the garages versus the size of the city of Santa Cruz, it seemed to me that it was disproportionately high.
This is Sheila Coonerty trying to dope up the stats. She's the co-chair of the ACLU and formerly chair of the Downtown Commission, now a member. She's talking about the fact that there were 541, quote, calls for service last year in the parking lot garages, of which only 140 concerned, quote, criminal behavior, and of which apparently only 29 resulted in real citations, if I understand these stats accurately. Maybe I don't. But certainly, there was only 541 calls for service, and those included cops going through on their own initiative, which are also called calls for service. They're logged in the same way, according to testimony you'll hear from either Sergeant Flippo or Deputy Chief Vogel. So her contention now is, well, it's a lot of calls for service in one place, even though there were 77,000 calls for service in the city of Santa Cruz. Well, considering that there are hundreds of people who park their vehicles there, compared with, let's say, one person who parks his car in front of his own house or his own driveway, yeah, I suppose it's proportionately, it's more in a certain sense, but in another sense, if you look at the number of people using the garage and the bars that are nearby and all the other activities that are going on, it hardly seems a huge number of calls. And again, I'm trying to be fair to merchants like Ryan Coonerty, who is pushing this, who because he feels there's a genuine problem. This is what he's told me. It took 40 minutes to tell me this. He thinks there's a problem with bike thieves and women feeling unsafe and urinating and defecating that we have here. Only one instance of defecating that actually resulted in a citation. Does that mean our police are wonderfully generous? Or does that mean that it just doesn't really happen that much? Or if it does happen, when people come out of bars and piss on the wall or piss around, it's not necessarily going to be helped by a no trespassing law because they'll be going to their cars anyway. I'm an advocate against this law, so obviously I have a point of view. But I would really like to see a fair examination of why people hearing all this evidence could possibly really believe this is a good idea.
Do the garage areas have a disproportionate amount of calls for illegal behavior compared to the city overall? Do you know that?
Well, if in terms of just strictly location, I mean, if we responded to your house 500 times in a year, I think that would be a substantial amount. But obviously, a parking garage is going to have a lot more issues associated with it than probably a residence does. I still think that's a high number. But I don't necessarily have any basis for comparison. If you look at the total number of calls on an annual basis for the city, it's a relatively low percentage. But the fact that the parking garages are, to my thinking, supposed to be used for parking cars and bicycles, I think that's a high number of calls for service.
Matt, do you have a comment about that in response to Sheila's question?
I think it's kind of comparing apples and oranges because citywide calls, just like Sheila asked, covers the 11 square miles of the city. What would be more helpful is to look at the percentage of calls for service in the downtown. And I think what you would find is that these calls represent a pretty good portion of the calls for service. Just based on the reason we brought this ordinance forward is because of comments from our staff. And people, have suggested that there's some other reason or strategy for this. But honestly, there's none. It's basically that our people are saying we have a management issue in these facilities and we want to do something about it.
So, okay, let's take Matt Farrell at his word here. It's a management problem. He wants to help his staff out by eliminating all the problems, by eliminating all the people in these parking structures who have traditionally used them for a variety of purposes. Socializing, going to and from other places, hanging out, shelter from the rain on occasion, conversation with folks in cars, whatever it is, diapering your baby, you name it, reading a book, listening to music. Hey, all these now criminal activities after the law passes on April 11th and it becomes law May 11th, or actually it'll be late May when it becomes law. It'll be a month after the second reading at City Council. He asks a very pertinent question, but he does not provide the answer. The question is it a disproportionate number of police calls in the downtown area? And that is a stat that I'm sure they have, but they aren't giving it to us. Why isn't it presented to us? What percentage of calls in the downtown area are going to these parking lots and garages? I don't think it's that hard a stat to get a hold of. They've had 4 months to get it. This law was originally cooked up in November or even in October, And it's been circulating through. They tried to ram it through on the January consent agenda. Not consent agenda. It wasn't on the consent agenda. It was on the afternoon agenda, though. And people protested, so they sent it to the Downtown Commission, which couldn't even, you know, found they didn't have enough stats to even talk about it meaningfully, so they had to delay it. And then Ryan Coonerty rushes forward with two special meetings. He's to get it on the, he wanted it on the March agenda. Now he's getting it on the April agenda. But we haven't heard what percentage of calls downtown does this really amount to? And what percentage of crimes downtown happen there? I mean, we're asking to blindly expand police power and also to eliminate public space. It's just too flimsy a basis to do it on. Even if it in some way helps parking lot attendants, I'm not even sure that that's necessarily true. Because the argument has been made, and I continue to repeat it, that many eyes are better than few. And when you drive people away from an area, it's the criminals you won't drive away. And they can disguise themselves very nicely as people parking cars if they want, for example. What you really want to get rid of are those bummy homeless people that really don't belong downtown anyway. You know, they don't belong, and they make us uncomfortable. And they're the largest number of complaints for camping, right? The nasty reality is not being faced, and five members of this commission refused to face it. One, Kathy Bisbee, did. Although I don't think she talked about it as strongly and as openly as I would have talked about it.
For me, as a manager, that was grounds to bring this question forward. People who work for me, who've been doing this for a long time, say there's a change in condition and they need some help to do their job. It's my responsibility to try and give them the tools to do it.
Thank you. Kathy and then Joe.
I have some questions. When police officers go through the garage and when they're doing the beat in general in the downtown, are they alone or are they working in teams? So those three officers that are working the A team, are they walking together or are they always alone?
We encourage the officers to walk alone when they're working during the day. There's times at nighttime when we encourage them to work in pairs, depending upon what type of call they're responding to or what type of an event they happen to be working at. So typically you'll see the officers by themselves during the day, and that's what we encourage. It gives us more coverage that way, obviously, by having two officers working separate than by having them paired up together.
I'm just always accustomed to running into two at a time when I'm walking downtown, and which has been helpful when I've needed them. And then do you have undercover police officers that walk the downtown beat as well?
No, we do not.
No. Are there any undercover officers that are working around drug dealing and that kind of thing in downtown Santa Cruz or in the downtown area?
We have an officer assigned to the Santa Cruz County Narcotics Enforcement Task Force, CNET, as it's traditionally called. CNET is a countywide task force, and they address narcotic issues throughout the county. So that task force will periodically be in the city of Santa Cruz working on a particular case, not necessarily downtown, could be anywhere in the city limits. But it's kind of hit or miss as to whether they're here or not. We do have several of our, downtown is kind of the hub for going and having lunch. And several of our plainclothes officers, our detectives, will be down there during the lunch hour, you know, at the various restaurants and that sort of thing. But we don't have any undercover officers deployed downtown.
Not actually on duty.
No.
Yeah. And then the other question that I had is, the calls that are coming from the garages, are all of those 500 calls actual crimes being committed, or are those calls that are actually crimes happening in the garages, or are the garages used as a reference point for things that are happening in the downtown?
That's actually sort of a difficult question, because when you look at our records management system, sometimes the garages are used as a point of reference for something that may be occurring, say, on the sidewalk in front of the garage. It could be, you know, if you're in the parking lot behind Wells Fargo Bank, which actually has an address of 74 River Street, the officer could say, I'm on the north side of the parking garage, which then the dispatcher would input that information into their computer, which would indicate the call for services occurring at the parking garage itself. the calls for service that I talked about are not all criminal activity. There weren't 541 crimes committed that were reported to us. A lot of those calls are actually self-initiated calls where the officer just goes out on extra checks at the parking garage. In fact, I was reviewing the printout I have before I came up to the podium. When an officer merely does a patrol check and drives through a garage or walks through the garage to make sure that there is no illegal activity occurring, typically they'll go out on the radio and say, put me out on extra checks at the triple decker. And that shows up on the printout as extra checks. Now, if the officer walks through or drives through and doesn't encounter any criminal activity, they clear the call, it still shows up as a call for service, as an extra check, but it's not documented as a crime. And there's a lot of those on this printout that I have.
The other question I had was, what is the difference in salary between a CSO and a police officer?
I think a CSO is making about $4,000 a month, and a police officer is making about $6,500 a month.
And last question, is trespassing a misdemeanor or a felony?
Trespassing is a misdemeanor.
It's a misdemeanor.
Yes.
Okay, we had Joe, and then I have a question.
And I have a question.
Now, when you say trespassing, I'm talking about the penal code violation for trespassing.
Right, so if this ordinance passed...
I believe it's written as an infraction in this particular ordinance.
So it's just a fineable offense?
Right, it's not a jailable offense.
Jail.
It's just a fine, correct.
Unless you can't pay the fine.
That's what?
You can't pay the fine, then there's a jail.
Well, then they issue a bench warrant for your arrest. And then, yeah, you get picked up and go to jail. But the actual crime itself is not punishable by jail time.
How much is the fine for trespassing?
I don't have that information.
Help me with this. Staff needs help. Conditions have changed. They think this might help them.
And nowhere in the course of this hearing was there a discussion of how much money the fine would be. Apparently no member of this downtown commission thought it important enough to say how much a member of the public or a poor person would be charged for violating this law. Because Officer Pam Bechtel, for instance, has shown, at least as my second-hand experience through accounts of people who've gotten citations from her, that she will claim that she's given warnings to people who say they've never even seen her before. And then she'll get right citations. And judges like Kim Baskett, who I tend to talk about at greater length, she's not a judge, she's a referee, but she's where most of the infraction citations go in our system here, credit the officer's account and don't credit the response of the individual citizen, the defendant. So this downtown commission is voting to pass on a law without even knowing the impact it's going to have, the financial impact on ordinary people or on poor people. Nor is there any discussion of the impact this law is going to have on the business community. This was a point brought out to me by a downtown association critic of the law who talked to me from his business a couple days ago, who said, look, I don't think this is a good way to sell the city of Santa Cruz. And that was my perspective on it. And that's why he told me he appreciated my coming and making a presentation in the belly of the beast to the merchants at their downtown association meeting, which is supposedly open to the public. But then, as I said, the final meeting they excluded us from. When we walked in to hear the final discussion and debate, they wouldn't let us stay. And I said, why? Litigation, personnel matters, those are basis for excluding the public. But I said, no, we don't get any money from the public, so we don't have to have you here. We don't get any money from the government, so we can kick you out. So, but the question is, what's the impact on the business community, really? Do tourists really want to be subject to these kinds of police state measures, these kinds of draconian measures? They want to be forced to leave their vehicles within 15 minutes to walk into to a store? I mean, is that really how we want to sell Santa Cruz? Is that in keeping with the spirit of this town? It doesn't sound that way to me. We don't know what the fine is going to be. Well, I know what the fine is going to be. It can be anywhere up to $1,000. That's the infraction. It's probably likely to be between $75 and $200. But that little point was not raised, even though the city attorney was in the room and could have said that. And, of course, we, the public, were muzzled from raising that issue or asking for it or commenting on it because public comment was closed.
call from someone who's doing maintenance in one of the structures saying they see a suspicious person. If this ordinance passes, you respond to this particular call. I'm trying to characterize what is the difference in what's happening now to what if this ordinance passes. So you respond to a, say, a suspicious person call from the staff person at the garage. One of the contentious issues around this is this 10-minute time limit. It's just one of them. But how do you see enforcement of this particular call? Does this require that the individual who made the call be there by the time the officer responds to verify that that's the individual? They're still there, so they've obviously been there longer than the 10 minutes, because I don't know that you're going to respond within a 10-minute time frame. Is it the person who made the call that is necessary to be there in order for you to cite it, or does once the responding officer come to the particular location, do they have to be there 10 minutes to ensure that that person is in violation of that, or can you ask that person to move along because the definition of the ordinance is this structure is dedicated to this reason? I'm trying to get to where I would assume the officer would not automatically write a citation, but you'd find out what the situation is before you would do that. I'm wondering about this 10-minute thing and how the question of selective enforcement, who's going to determine the 10 minutes and how's that going to play in?
Well, I think given the fact that we have to prove our case beyond a reasonable doubt, if we were to go to court on it, we would have to have somebody who could articulate that this person was in the garage in excess of 10 minutes. So if a maintenance worker called us and was there when we got there and said, this person's been hanging around the garage for the last 20 minutes, we took a detailed statement from that individual, and the maintenance person said, I'd like to press charges, I'd like to sign a complaint against that individual. Then in that particular case, yes, we would go ahead and issue a citation. If the maintenance worker were not there when we got there and we had no way to truly justify how long this person were in the garage, I think that would, we would give that person a warning at that particular point in time and probably, make a notation that we warned them and send them on their way. If the officer observed the person in the garage for in excess of 10 minutes, then of course we would issue the citation because the officers witnessed the entire 10-minute period and could testify to that in court.
So if a maintenance worker was doing it, they can say that. If another civilian, or say, for example, I have a business in one of those structures, if I've been inside the business and I make a call because I see someone, but I haven't been observing them for 10 minutes solid, I just say there's some suspicious people here or something's happening, and I make a call, is my statement enough because I haven't observed them for 10 minutes if they're still there when you arrive? They could have left, they could have come back. You see my point.
I do, and I suppose you could make a case for there being a reasonable cause to believe that a crime has been committed, and the person would probably want to sign a citation, or if they wanted to, we would accept that and go ahead and cite the individual. But when you get into the courtroom,
right,
in a situation like that, you're going to have a hard time proving that case beyond a reasonable doubt.
Right.
If the person came to court, the witness, and said, well, I saw them, and then I lost sight of them for a period of time, and then I saw them again, I'm not a judge, but if I were, I would probably find that individual not guilty.
Right.
How do you make a case like that?
That was where the actual application of this particular ordinance, that's what I was trying to get to. I mean, it seems to me that there may not be as much it seems to me that there's going to be a lot of opportunity for an individual officer to, on a case-by-case basis, which I assume you already do, when you respond to a call, whether you write a citation or not, issue a warning, it's a case-by-case, as the city attorney said about the rape cases. They're all individual. You have a law, but then there's interpretation based on the facts for each one. So to sum this up, the significant difference in responding to that particular call if this ordinance was passed as opposed to right now without this ordinance, what's the difference if maintenance calls you right now and says they have a suspicious person? Or once this ordinance passes and they make that same phone call, what's the difference?
Right. If under the current law, we wouldn't have any reason to ask them to leave the garage. We could respond, we could investigate, we could determine whether or not there was criminal activity occurring. We could complete a field interview card on the individual, request identification, we could take their photograph. And then once we were through with the detention, assuming the detention didn't turn into probable cause to make an arrest, we would release the individual, and that would be as far as we would go with that contact.
So, what we got here is Joe Ferrara, the man who says who told me personally he would never vote for a law that could be selectively enforced if that was likely. In essence, kind of pointing out the fact that he's trying to find the difference between the law as it currently exists and as it would exist if this 15-minute trespass law passes. And what he's finding is that essentially saying if the maintenance worker finds your behavior suspicious, now he'll be able to tell you to leave and get you out of there, even if you're leaving it up to the maintenance worker and what he wants done. Or, for that matter, any citizen who wants to say, this is suspicious behavior, get out of this parking lot, we don't like you being here. But there's no real clarification as to how this would or wouldn't be selectively enforced. And that key issue is something we're going to pick up again on Sunday when I come back at 9:30. Because I believe Thomas Levitt is back with the wake-up call. I think he's returned. I think he's going to be picking up on his show at 7:30 for all you Levitt lovers.
Levitt.
That's the voice of, I'm not going to say who that is, but you longtime listeners know who that is. And you know what that means. It's time for me to start singing, Happy Trails to You Until We Meet Again. In fact, it's 8:00. I'm 10 seconds overtime, even as we speak. So thanks for being with me on this edition of Bathroom Spears Broadsides. Tune in again. Give me a call on the Huff line, 423-HUFF, if you've got some thoughts. Or come in again on the radio or on the phone or however you'd like next Sunday. We'll pick it up from there.
Yesterday, and it's such a shame. Thousands of years on this earth, and we still haven't learned. It's not fine, it's not right. I'm gonna lay me down and I lay back. Watch us home. As we bomb in each other now, lay back and watch, lay back and watch. As we bomb in each other now, hey, 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 yeah. Everybody's right for so. I'm ready to fight. Explore the hell out of the whole world and then kill them when they want what they deserve. It's not fine, it's not right. Gonna lay me down and I lay back and watch, lay back and watch. As we pour in each other now, lay back and watch, watch as we burn. As we pour in each other now, hey, 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 hey. Now greed is a virtue, and baby, I won't hurt you. Take what I give you. Take it to your deathbed. Just listen to what the fuck I said. Cause asking for nothing is too much. I said asking for nothing is too much. Lay back and watch. Lay back and watch. Yes, we're bombing each other now. Watch as we burn, watch as we burn, as we burn in each other now.
I've got to send you back to your family, just cannot get along with you.
Just can't stay here in heaven.